Hello, and welcome to the first episode of the Engage This podcast. I am your host, Kat Gross, and Engage This is an open educational digital resource designed to help students and new activists answer the question, what can I do and how? A kind of toolbox that provides students and activists with the information they need to engage their communities for social change. The resource covers proven tactics and strategies, actions and campaigns, interviews with successful activists, as well as the information you need about the key movements and concepts that shape feminist and social justice activism. You can find out more at engagethis.org. Today, I am joined with Ashley McFarland and Stacey Keltner, the two editors of Engage This, and they're going to kind of dive into what Engage This is all about. Hey guys, how are you today?
Good.
Very good. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Well, the project really began several years ago, probably around 2005, 2006, 2007, somewhere around there, when I started working with students. So it started, you know, probably over a dozen years ago, when I started developing community engagement projects for my classes, specifically my gender studies classes. And what I was trying to do with that project was to answer students' questions about what should they do. So what I found in teaching was that I was really good at making students suffer and recognize how terrible the world is, but I was really bad at actually teaching them what they could do afterwards. So I would get a lot of questions from students about, well, what do I do now? What should I do now? And I'm like, I don't know what you should do. I just, you know, I'm just teaching the theory and the history. So I found myself developing a lot of lectures on the concept of responsibility and how we become responsible for what we know and how we have to begin to figure that out. And how there's no real program for how you address problems. And that what I really think is that students need to think about what their own strengths are. And I always put this in a kind of way that Emmanuel Levinas talked about work, is to say you're sort of dependent on what your hands can give. And so what that says to me is, you know, different people are have different strengths. So I think what I tend to be good at is making really difficult theoretical material make sense. But I'm not really good at working in a child welfare system, for example. And I have a friend who does that. I don't know how she does that. It's amazing. I completely support it. And I do everything I can to support those efforts. But I don't think I can personally do that. For her, she says, well, who else would do it if I didn't do it? So, you know, everyone has sort of their different strengths. And I try to put it that way. And everyone has their different interests. So I started developing a community engagement project where students would be responsible for developing some kind of civic and community engagement project over the course of the semester. And we would have, you know, discussion groups about it and different workshops. But one thing I found very quickly was that the history and reality of activism was completely invisible. They weren't finding it. They don't see it. It's not covered by media. They're not taught about anything that's going on. So there was no real resources for them. And so I started, you know, developing just little articles or, you know, pointing them here and there to say, you know, here's what these people do and introducing that to the classroom. And then I decided just to turn it into a blog just to collect them all for the class. And the blog was called feministactivism101.com. And that launched the year before Ashley started grad school in the American Studies program at Kennesaw State.
I started working on the project in 2013 when I started my master's program in American Studies. I received a graduate research assistantship, and the project that I was working on was Stacey's public scholarship project, feministactivism101.com. And I was really nervous to start this project because I didn't see myself as an activist, so I didn't think that I should write about it. And at that time, really, I thought the only way to be an activist was to march in a protest. And I think a lot of people think that still. That year in my master's program, I also took a course on American social movements, and I became fascinated with activists and the study of activism. And a lot of the work that I did in this first year has guided my research ever since then, because I still study activism and activists and social movements. I also teach gender and women's studies now, and I also have students complete the engagement project in my class that Stacy uses in hers. Mm-hmm. And I've witnessed my struggles or my students struggle to identify ways that they think they can make change in their communities, but they also always come out successfully. They move past that hesitation and they become active and they do really fantastic things. A lot of students choose to do work around domestic violence and sexual assault. A lot of students and groups of students, like sororities, have held hygiene drives for homeless women or low-income women. I had another student who did a really excellent project volunteering at a hospice facility. And in addition to that work, she analyzed the racial dynamics of the nursing or the hospice center that she worked in. She noticed that almost all of the residents, all of the patients were white, but everyone that worked there was Black. And she wrote a really powerful essay about that. I had another student that organized a free daycare in her church, not just during church hours, but during the week when people, you know, need free childcare. So I've seen them do some really fantastic things, turn into activists. And I really hate when I hear people say that young folks, millennials, Gen Z are not engaged, because it's just not true. I think they're incredibly engaged. I think they're more engaged than some of the generations that have come before them.
One thing I think is really sort of exciting about things they're already doing, and then they realize that they're engaged. Yeah. And they realize that they can formalize that engagement and that it becomes stronger. And, you know, I've had students, you know, who have ended up developing huge projects, yeah, you know, after the class. A lot of them do things like teach-ins, or my one of the first ones that really floored me, that I was very excited about, was I had a student who she was from Virginia, actually, and she had a friend who was in a really bad domestic violence situation. And she had been trying forever to try to get her friend out of it. And so she came to talk to me. She said, I want to do something like this. I want to help my friend. And I said, okay, how do we bring this up to the social level so that we're addressing the community? And then in this way, you can also help her, because you can show her you're doing this. And she ended up developing a sort of a community guide for handling and negotiating domestic violence. So she found every counselor, every doctor, you know, every shelter, every, you know, site you could find. And she created this trifold brochure, and she printed it and she disseminated it everywhere, in doctor's offices, hospitals, hair salons, you know, everywhere that she could put a stack of brochures, she did. And I thought that was so inspiring. And what I really like about that, and what, you know, I hope that Engage This provides for students, is, you know, the knowledge that they can identify a problem and figure out a solution to it. There doesn't have to be a place to go intern. There doesn't have to be an institution or some kind of program that's already set up, because a lot of times there aren't. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you can't respond to it. And there are lots of different ways that we can respond all the time. So I always use her as an example, because it was so creative and so felt, and just brilliant. So she's my model.
that's such an incredible project, but that's such a great point, Stacy, that they realize that there is, you know, there may not be someone in their community that's focusing on that particular issue or struggle, but sometimes they realize the sheer scope of how many people really are addressing that issue, and they're able to make connections, and a really great networking experience for a lot of students. I became so frustrated during the protest that happened right after George Floyd's murder, when people kept saying, okay, what are they going to do now? They're protesting. They need to move into a new direction. And I just thought, or that they kept saying, what are their demands? I kept saying, what are you talking about? Like, there are people that have been working on police violence on the ground forever, all the time. Like, they're still there. Let's just, now that we're all activated, let's find them and support them. You know, mm-hmm. It's, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I love when students are able to see how much activism really is happening in their community, and they can become a part of it.
and to recognize how invisible it is, yeah. that they have to know where to look. Exactly. And so if they then know it's there, they know how to get connected on social media. And so they find alternative news networks.
No, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. I mean, you find a lot of, places to donate to, people to donate to, petitions to sign, ways to move forward without actually, having to join those public protests, like the marches and the sit-ins and whatnot, if you're not physically able to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're talking a lot about, your students and, a lot of them not even realizing that they're actually engaged in their community already. So why do you guys think that education is so important to activism?
Well, women's studies classrooms in particular, I think, are so important to activism because of their commitment to social justice issues. They're the optimal place to learn how to put theory into practice. That's what the community engagement projects, which Stacey and I both assign in our classes, are supposed to do. But gender and women's studies programs, it's important to remember, they emerged from a body of knowledge that was produced by activists, by feminist activists who were engaged in social justice works. Many of them were active in the women's liberation movement of the 60s and 70s, and they used the phrase, you hear this often associated with the women's liberation movement, the personal is political, to explain how personal experiences are shaped by social and political policies. So education was central to the women's liberation movement. They used consciousness raising groups, which were discussion groups that made people aware of how the things that they experienced in their own life were actually connected to larger social political structures. And that's how a body of feminist theory was developed, the body that we continue to build upon today. Students in our classrooms put that theory into action to understand how systems of power and privilege shape our individual lives and the agency that we're given and what to do with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we just celebrated 50 years of gender women's studies as like a recognized study, right? This past year?
Yeah, the first program was in San Diego 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's also not just women's studies classrooms, but, fields that emphasize social justice, like Black studies, American studies, Latinx studies, peace studies, all of these, and as they sort of come together, through, privileging different focuses, whether that be gender, race, or class, all of them have this social justice intent because it like Ashley said, comes out of a social movement. And education and awareness are considered key to social movements and social change. And that's one of the reasons it's so bothersome that these programs are always under threat. And there's a reason they're under threat. It's because they can be dangerous.
Right.
But one thing I would add too, when we think about the relationship between sort of education and theory on the one side and then activism or public action on the other, is, that's sort of a boundary that we're always trying to challenge. And this notion of engagement, which is, why I like the term engagement, is it's not just service, right? So what we're trying to get away from is like some kind of idea where, I come out of the ivory tower and I know what you need and let me provide this service to you, because that's not how it works. That's not responding to community need. It's ignorant, basically. Yeah,
absolutely.
And so I like this idea of making, making sure we're thinking about not just what do I have to give, but how am I going to be changed? And then how's that going to change what I think? So engagement works both ways where, you're affecting one another. So it's much more dynamic. And I would also say that, they're necessary to one another. When you have like theory or education or knowledge and there's no action, it's empty, right? Yeah. What's the point? Why is it's not really meaningful? But then when you have just activism out in the streets without thought and knowledge about history and reflection and discussion, then it's somewhat blind. And so I'm borrowing a formulation from Immanuel Kant to sort of formulate that in terms of blindness and emptiness. But I think, that's precisely why you know, we need these sorts of resources that we have so that we can see that complex relationship between, you know, education and theory on the one hand and action on the other, and how they inform one another. And also, you know, activism, you know, scholarship itself, writing, like these things are activism too, because what are you changing? Sometimes you're changing an entire field. I mean, if you look at like primatology, you know, or you look at the way in which we teach history these days, you know, everything from the sciences to the humanities, the way in which, you know, those fields are taught now are very much dependent upon activists entering universities. So it's a very, you know, complex, murky distinction, I guess, that always needs to be troubled.
Absolutely. I hope that we can serve as a resource for people during this time. COVID is disproportionately impacting communities that are already vulnerable. In our nation, Black Americans especially are dying at higher rates than whites. At the same time that we're witnessing multiple murders of innocent Black people by the police and by vigilantes acting with or without permission on behalf of the police. The pandemic, the economic fallout, the violence against people of color, they're all related. They're all the result of racist public policy and decades of white silence. People are angry right now and they are primed to act, but they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Protests and marches are incredibly important tools in the movement for social justice, and they are really cathartic. I think that they serve a very important purpose. But a lot of people can't participate in protests or marches for a number of different reasons. And I hope that this blog, that this toolbox and this podcast can help them see different areas of their life where they may already be engaged, or they have an avenue to start engaging in a deeper way.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think the world's changed, and we're going to have to see which way it's going. But it was shocking, like the amount of coverage, like how visible activism became over, you know, this past summer. And then surprisingly, on one day, it was just off all the media channels.
Yeah,
it just became a sub story. And that was really shocking to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the thing is that it did finally break through some kind of media white noise. And so it had to be covered, which I think is really, you know, really important. But again, it just got covered up again, which is very worrisome. So, you know, now, you know, you have to know how to be, you know, connected and networked, you know, so that you're getting real news. You're finding out what's happening on the ground, that, you know, the protests are still, you know, going on. You didn't have protests and then they're over, you know?
No, yeah.
And also, you know, one thing that, you know, it's sort of shown, this crisis has shown, is that, you know, it's not just a public health crisis and then a race relations crisis. The crisis that, you know, has been exposed is a social, cultural, political, economic crisis. It's, you know, connected, you know, at the deepest levels, across all of these sorts of domains that we tend to separate out. So, you know, my hope is that with this exposure of, you know, these sort of underlying intersecting problems, is that, you know, activism can become more visible, which is the point of this site, is just to make it more visible, so that people have resources, people know what people have done, people know how to get connected to others. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just, you know, as simple as, you know, reading an article about an activist who did something in particular, and you think, oh my God, I could do that. You know, I could do that today. Yeah. Like, I can become an activist right now, you know? And I think that's, you know, kind of very exciting. COVID and the crisis that we're living through right now is the fact that it's also the centennial of the women's vote. Mm. And that's, you know, very important. You had celebrations planned everywhere, you know, but with that, we also have to be cognizant of the fact that the women's vote was a very, you know, white movement that participated
in every woman.
Racial, it participated in, you know, racial suppression and disenfranchisement, right? So disenfranchised so many people. And so when you look at, you know, voter suppression and the history of, you know, voter suppression against minorities and Black communities and Latinx folk, then, you know, that in itself is sort of demonstrating the underlying issues that have exposed the health crisis as a race issue.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered a lot of super, super important stuff. And I think we have a very good grasp on, you know, what the blog is, what the podcast is going to be. So what are some things that we can expect to see from this podcast and even the blog?
Well, I'd like to turn that back around to you, Kat, because the podcast was your brilliant idea. So why don't you, you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're envisioning for the podcast?
Well, you know, I had been wanting to start a podcast for a while, and it was kind of about what we're going to be doing this podcast about, but I didn't really have kind of that push or really that help to do it. So I was kind of, I was lost in the dark, I guess, on that. But, you know, when I was doing my internship with you, Stacey, and you were talking about the blog and that's what we were going to be working on, I just kind of thought to myself, wow, a podcast would really complement this. You know, podcasts are really popular and, you know, a lot of people don't really have a lot of time to just sit and read articles, which is why we're going to have episodes related to a lot of the blog posts that are going to be on the website, which will be really awesome. I think, you know, a lot of really good interviews with popular activists and successful activists. And we're going to talk about, you know, I'd like to talk about burnout in activism and social media and activism, just, you know, activism. That's what it's all about. You know, that's what this whole thing is all about. So I'm excited to sit down with some of the writers, especially in student groups on KSU's Kennesaw State's campus, and just really talk through things. I think being able to talk with people was the biggest thing I wanted out of this, make it very conversational, open the conversations to listeners and readers, and just, I don't know, just make it one big conversation that you can listen to in little sections and not have to take it in all at once. And yeah, I think that's really what I was going for with it. I think we're going to see a lot of really cool, really interesting things from the podcast, at least.
Well, I'm so happy you pushed me to do this, pushed us toward this. I know Ashley's interested in this, but one thing that I really like, you know, in thinking about the development of this project, I love the idea of this as a resource that becomes something that is just completely run by students. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to get more and more students involved. We, you know, want people to submit papers and articles and, you know, ideas, maybe you should cover this, and to which I'll respond, why don't you write that? So we'll have submission guidelines. We want more people involved. People, you know, like you, Kat, you know, who's going to, you know, bring, you know, a fresh eye and say, I'd rather just do a podcast than write these articles, mm-hmm. You know, which is great. And that's precisely what we're, you know, trying to look for. And, you know, to have internships where, you know, we can have internships where people can come in and, you know, learn the ropes and, you know, run the site and help with processing submissions. So there's all kinds of editing opportunities and writing opportunities and event opportunities and just creating new partnerships and new connections. And I like the idea of having, you know, students come in every year and helping to sort of just change the face of it, just to keep it moving forward. So I think that's what I'm excited about. And that's sort of my hopes for the project.
I love that idea. I really, really hope that students participate because everyone comes in with a completely different perspective, a completely different background. And, you know, I learn so much from the articles that I read that students present. So yes, send us your submissions.
Yes, please send us submissions. We're always looking for new stuff. We're always looking for people to engage with us, you know, engage in this. But that's going to be all for this episode, guys. I am really excited to record future episodes. And thank you, Stacey and Ashley, for being a part of this with me and letting me be a part of this. I'm so honored. I'm so excited. And I cannot wait to share future episodes with you. And I cannot wait for you guys to read these awesome articles and continue on your education with activism. Thank you, guys. Talk to you next time.